Good evening. I'm Dr. Elaine Schroeder. Welcome to Mind Over Matter, a monthly K2 radio show that explores issues of the heart as well as the mind and body. We'll be on the air for an hour this evening with one or two short musical breaks. Hula is not a word that you would likely associate with Alaska. Both states have beaches, and both states are remote, and both states have indigenous dance traditions. But our Alaska tradition is quite different from hula. So despite the distance, the great distance between these two states, Hawaii and Alaska, there's indeed a hula group in Juneau, and it is called Hui Hula O Manoa. And the founder of Juneau's hula group is with me in the studio tonight. I'd like to welcome Elsa Demexa. Welcome.
Thank you, Elaine.
Yes.
Well, let me correct you right off the start. I'm not the founder of hula in Juneau. Well, let me just give you a little history. About 12 years ago, I ran into Missouri Smythe. I believe everybody knows her. And knowing that she had been a hula performer in Honolulu, I asked if she would be interested in starting a class in Juneau. And lo and behold, you know, a few months later, she got one going. So Missouri is really, I mean, I guess I was instrumental in asking her to start one, but Missouri gets the credit for actually getting it going. So.
Oh, wonderful. That's great to hear.
Yeah.
But how did you become involved in hula?
Well, I have been going to Hawaii for about 42 years or so, and have watched hundreds, if not thousands, of hula performances, and always wanting to, you know, move like that or dance the hula. But I thought it would be impossible. It looked so difficult. And, you know, but like I said, 12 years ago, I started studying it. Missouri was successful in recruiting a teacher in Hawaiian called Kumu, who lives in Hawaii. And she got him, you know, recruited from Haynes, like I said. And he started teaching in Juneau. And, you know, he was so encouraging, such a wonderful teacher. I immediately felt confident that I could actually do this. And, you know, with the exception of maybe a couple of years since then that I did not dance, I've been dancing hula for about 10 years.
And full disclosure, I briefly, for several months, quite a few years ago, engaged in this group. Mm-hmm. And because I love hula too.
Yes.
And that's one of the reasons why I wanted to have you come on the show. I know you know a lot about hula, and I know that you have persisted now for 20 years, and you are basically pretty much the convener in many ways of the group and mm-hmm. keep it going. And it's had a history of ebbing and flowing, different locations. Mm-hmm. Where do you meet now?
Now we meet on Sundays at the, it just changed to the Pioneer Home. And on Tuesdays we meet at Pavitt's Fitness Club.
Okay.
Yeah.
So how long are your
the classes
sessions?
Yeah, they're classes. 2 hours each. On Sundays, the classes start with 1 hour of beginner's classes. So anybody can come and do 1 hour of basic hula steps. So I encourage you and anybody else to just give it a try. You know, hula is a really wonderful in many ways. It works on the mind and the body and the spirit. It's healing. You know, as a matter of fact, you know, doctors in Hawaii have been known to prescribe hula for their recovering patients.
Oh.
You know, because of its healing elements. Of course, there is the social aspect of it.
Which is healing, too, to be part of.
Yes.
All the research shows that it is our social network, our connectedness with other people that is the main predictor of our mood, mm-hmm. and also our recovery from illnesses. There's yes. been studies showing that women with breast cancer do better if they're part of a support group.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And Hula provides that. And a lot of heart patients are prescribed in their healing process Hula. Mm-hmm. And a lot of women and men, as a matter of fact, that are in prison, they're finding there's a lot of Hula going on in a lot of prisons around the country now.
Huh.
Yeah. And there is discipline involved. There is dedication, a lot of effort in being a part of a Hula group. So, you know, that just makes all the sense in the world that.
Uh-huh. Do most of your, well, how many people are in your group now?
On any given time, I would say about 15 people.
And do most people go twice a week?
Most people go twice a week. Yeah. Once, as a matter of fact, once people are really involved, unless they're traveling or something, they are there.
They want to be there.
Absolutely.
Because it's so rewarding.
It's so rewarding. No matter what's going on in your life, you know, no matter how much stress you have or whatever, you walk into that Hula group. Mm. And we start with a chant. It's a healing chant. It's like a prayer.
By any chance, do you have it memorized?
I think so.
Could you give us a taste of it?
Okay. E ho mai ka ike mai luna mai e o na mea una noe ao o na mele e e ho mai e ho mai e ho mai.
Oh, that's beautiful. That's just beautiful.
The first verse
so you
of it.
Start with a chant, mm-hmm. and
you just it's immediately healing. And then we get into the kahikos, which are the traditional dances. And then we do the awanas, which are the more modern, the ones that most people are familiar with.
Well, could you tell us what is the difference between the traditional and the modern?
Well, right off the bat, the traditional does not use any musical instrument except the ipuheke, which is a gourd. It's a drum made out of gourd, you know. It's, mm-hmm. And that's all that the instrument that they use. Mm-hmm. And, well, of course, there's a couple of other instruments.
Keeps the beat.
Yes, it absolutely
keeps the beat. Well,
that's
interesting because there's a similarity with Alaska indigenous dance.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
it
okay.
is. You know, there's, as a matter of fact, when I hear indigenous, you know, Alaska music, I kind of think of, you know, Hawaiian music mm-hmm. as well. And there's a lot of interest. And when we perform, a lot of times, if there's a lot of Alaska natives in the group, they really, you know, you see them smiling and connecting.
Yeah.
So there is something, some connection. Some researcher should do some work on that. You know.
Well, it's interesting because in the traditional dance, it's vocal and it's the drum. And that is, at least Tlingit dance mm-hmm. is, or Southeast Alaskan native dance is vocal
yes.
with a drum.
Yes.
There's no, there are not any other instruments?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. There's well, no, there are some, you know, like castanets, and there's some, I forget the name of this, like a stick, kalau sticks.
Oh yes, yes.
Yeah. There's some different instruments
percussion?
Like that.
They're more
yes,
percussion.
Exactly. But now with the modern music, there's ukulele, which was introduced by the Portuguese, and you know there's guitar playing and all that. But that's the more modern. Awana.
So with the modern dance, mm-hmm. Is there any other instrument than the ukulele or the guitar? Do they?
Traditionally, it's really ukuleles
okay.
for the most part.
Yeah.
But of course, you know, you can have a whole
band.
You know, orchestra.
Yeah, yeah like right? they did in the, yeah, in the, yes. I'm thinking in the 30s, you yeah, know, at yeah. the big hotels in Honolulu.
Absolutely.
They'd have like
exactly.
these big dance bands and a hula dancer right. would get up. Right. Absolutely.
Yeah, and that's a lot of, you know, that's the hula most people are familiar with. But, you know, hula is really a more revered, you know, dance. It's a...
More of a sacred dance.
Absolutely. There is, you know, history being told, the Hawaiian culture being shared. You know, it's a... It's not your Elvis Presley, you know, coconut shell hula.
So let's delve a little more into traditional dance and its contrast to modern dance. What about the chanting? Do the dancers chant it, or does the percussionist chant it?
Actually, in traditional hula, usually it's the person that plays the ipuheke mm-hmm. that does the chanting.
Which is but a gourd?
Yeah, it's the gourd. And the dancers, there are some hulas where some kahikos that they chant. And that's called, a lot of times that's called kahea, which means to, you know, say the word.
So, and what are kohikos?
Kahikos are the dances themselves.
Mm-hmm.
But kahea is what the person, the dancer, chants, you know, speaks out as they're dancing.
Mm-hmm.
And usually kumus, which are the teachers, are the ones that drum the ipuheke.
Mm-hmm.
And that is pretty standard. In the olden days, it used to be only men that did that.
The men who would
that was a way of telling a story. Hula traditionally is a way of telling stories. And the people responsible in the very ancient times were the men that told the stories, and the women would demonstrate.
And their hand movements
exactly.
and dances would demonstrate the
right.
story.
Right. And you might wonder how that started. It goes back to the volcano, the Pele, the goddess of the volcano.
Uh-huh.
Her little sister, this is a legend, you know, who knows how true that was. But her little sister and her best friend, Hopoe, were in the forest. And they loved going to the forest, spent a lot of time there. And one day Hopoe dreamt, you know, that she saw the trees moving and the sound of the wind making, you know, like what sounded like music to her. And Pele, out of, you know, when they got back, Pele, out of boredom, had heard about this new form of entertainment, asked her to perform this new thing. And Hopoe performed for Pele the hula. And that's, legend has it, that's how it started.
I love the idea of the swaying trees because it just really fits in with the hands.
Absolutely. If you watch, you know, leaves moving, that is the way our hands move.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how, you know, stories are told.
And would there be a sense of sacredness to the traditional dance that doesn't exist with the modern dance?
Oh, absolutely.
Because I really feel when I hear the chanting mm-hmm. and see traditional dance, mm-hmm. it feels more spiritual
right.
rather than entertainment.
Mm-hmm. Oh, there's so much to it. It's not so much entertainment. I mean, with the awanas, a lot of it is entertainment. But kahikos are very sacred dances. As a matter of fact, there are some that we're not taught yet because we're not ready to learn those sacred dances. They're reserved for those that have dedicated their lives to hula or that are, you know, serious, serious students of hula, even though I consider myself a serious student. But by Hawaiian standards, no. Halaus, meaning hula schools that are run by kumus that have been basically anointed by their kumus and their kumus before that.
Oh, so there's...
People just don't go to school and become a kumu. It has to be passed on to you. You mm-hmm. have to be anointed, basically.
There's a lineage.
Oh, absolutely. Very sacred one.
So no one can enter. You can enter, but you have to enter being part of a halau
yes.
with a kumu, and then that be an extremely serious student.
Absolutely.
And that mm-hmm. kumu may say, you can now go off on your
absolutely.
Own.
Absolutely.
And be a kumu.
Yes. And there's a process for that. For example, in our hui, here, we have an alakai. An alakai is somebody that's appointed by our kumu's in Honolulu, so she can't be here all the time. So an alakai is appointed to kind of take her place in her absence. So, you know, no one can just be an alakai or a kumu. It's just not done.
Is that your role?
No, that's not my role. There's
somebody else who's
doing that. Hula sister. by the name of Tonya Cramp. That is Analakai.
Here in Juneau.
Yes, yes, she's in Juneau.
Okay.
She's lived in Hawaii, but she's a Junauite.
Now, because your kumu isn't here, who serves as your teacher?
The Alakai.
She does.
Yes, she does. But we go to Hawaii once a year, and our kumu comes here once a year.
Uh-huh.
And we learn new chants, new hulas, you know, so now, it's a serious commitment.
Now, with these more sacred dances that only a highly experienced hula dancer could do, would they be performed publicly? Or, okay,
they
so
can
it's
be.
Just...
Well, traditionally, they were not, you know, of course, well, there's a lot of history to hula. Like in the 1800s or so, hula was banned. You know,
similar to Native Alaskans.
Absolutely. They say that the missionaries banned it, but actually, that was not the case. They disapproved of it, and when King Kamehameha, the first wife, Queen Kahumanu, became She was accepted into the church, into the, you know, Christian religion. She, knowing that it was not approved by the, you know, Christian religion, she officially banned hula.
Ooh.
And so she is responsible for having.
She is, but if you look at deep structure of colonialism, mm-hmm. obviously, you know, the pressure on her.
Of course, yeah. Yes. And it's because of the disapproval of the missionaries that
she took
that action.
She wanted to ingratiate herself to the missionaries.
Mm-hmm. And
it was a major form of, you know, racism to, mm-hmm. you know, have that be banned.
Absolutely. They thought of it as being vulgar and sinful and, you know, and it did not come back until King Kalakaua, who also, his nickname is the Merry Monarch.
Yeah.
And you've heard of the Merry Monarch Festival that's held every year.
I'd love to go.
Yes. And so David Kalakaua is really responsible for bringing hula back out of the, you know, it was never stopped being performed. It was practiced by the Hawaiians because that is who they are.
How many years was it banned?
Oof.
Did the queen ban it? Was she capable of essentially shutting it down?
Basically, I guess shutting it down might be a, you know, severe word,
okay.
term, because it was danced in the backyards. It was danced in the, you know, in people's homes secretly.
Okay.
So it never went away.
Yeah. That's what I was wondering, how many years it was publicly banned.
It was several years.
Several,
many
years. 100 years or 50 years.
I would say a lot.
So, but it was never lost because?
Never lost because it was the Hawaiians kept it going.
Uh-huh.
You know, under the radar.
Got it.
So,
yeah.
You know, but King Kalakaua brought it to the forefront.
Oh, wonderful. Yeah. What year would that be around?
I think it was like around 1864, I would say.
Oh.
I could check my notes and like,
but
actually 1874. I was off by 10 years.
Excellent.
Yeah.
So do you in your group practice mm-hmm. both traditional and modern hula?
Yes, we do kahikos and awanas. Kahikos take a lot of memorization.
Yeah,
because you have to learn the words. You have to, you know, be able to chant them. You have to.
Wait, I thought only the percussionist chanted.
But yeah, meaning like kaheaing, kaheaing. Like some songs, for example, like there's a hana chant that we do right now.
Uh-huh.
The kumu would do one line, and we do the next line.
Oh.
The kumu would do, you know, that's how. But
okay.
But you, no matter what, whether you're going to chant or not, you should know the words and the meanings of what you're dancing.
Yeah.
And applies mm-hmm. to the awanas as well.
Are the dance styles different? Are they different movements? How are they different?
Yes. Kahikos are not as flowy, I would say. Awanas are, you know, very flowy, fluid. And, I mean...
Yeah.
But the beauty of kahikos is, you know, it can be described as fluid. It's just, it's beautiful.
It is, is there a kind of a hierarchy where, you know, there's a sense that the modern dance is more, you know, resorts for resorts and just for fun versus the traditional?
Well, not to true Hawaiians or true believers mm-hmm. of, you know, hula. But I would imagine for the, you know, general public, the awanas are what's entertaining. Awanas can be, well, even kahikos can be, but awanas can be very sexy, playful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And a lot of Hawaiian music is with a lot of innuendos. I mean, what you read is not what you get. You know, there's a lot of, you know, double meanings.
With the traditional dance, there mm-hmm. are, it can be sexual.
It could be, I mean,
or they romantic, have, they, sexual. They act, I mean, sweet.
They have literally
like honey, yeah.
procreation dances
ah.
in kahikos that, you know, can make you blush.
Ah!
Mm-hmm. But most of those are performed, well, I wouldn't, we don't dance those. We're not ready yet. We are hui. That's like a fledgling halau.
Yeah, so hui is what hui, you are here.
Yes. Hui means a club, the literal yeah. meaning. We are a club. It's going to take a few more steps for us to be a halau, learning a few more chants. There's a lot of sacredness, as I said. For example, you see all these flower leis. You have, you know, when you are done with your lei, you just don't throw it in the trash or you don't put it in recycling. You have to chant it back into the earth.
Mm.
You have to learn all those chants. Mm-hmm. There's chants for, you know, when you go to park your car, there's a chant for, you know, and you chant for people's healings. Yeah, there's a lot of chants to know. And there's a lot of steps to becoming a halau. We're almost there. You know, I ask our kum, well, you know, what else do we need to do?
So you don't need to have a kumu to have a halau.
Oh, yes, you do.
I mean, a kumu in residence.
Well, I suppose not, but as you have to have a kumu.
Yeah.
Our kumu has schools throughout
the
world.
Has schools that are also halau.
Yes, I mean, she has a school in Honolulu.
Yeah.
She has a school in Beijing. She has a school in Paris where actually she you know, started her first halau in Paris. And she also has one in Rome and one in Juneau, Alaska. So
that is so exciting.
It is exciting.
Have you ever had a reunion with everybody?
Close. We went to Paris last July.
Uh-huh.
A year ago, not this uh-huh. past, a year ago, you know, July. And we had people from, yeah, China, Italy, and, yeah. So it was somewhat of a reunion, but not everybody showed up, so.
Uh-huh.
But it was wonderful. It's just, you know, it's a way of spreading aloha. You know, I'm sure everybody's familiar with the word aloha.
Which is, yeah.
Yeah, and hula is a way of spreading that.
Well, also, you know, for me as a tourist and the several times I've been to Hawaii, you know, they talk about the aloha spirit. They talk about family, how important family is. So is that, do you feel that's all integrated in hula? It's just
yes.
all of a piece?
Absolutely. It is, you know, it connects families. It keeps their history going. It, you know, stories are told through hula.
Mm-hmm.
It keeps the Hawaiian history going.
Mm-hmm.
That's how that's how a lot of people know about Pele, Laka, all the goddesses and the gods of Hawaii are known because of hula.
Mm-hmm.
Because stories are told through hula.
And so it's been sort of a real renaissance of bringing.
Oh.
Is it really happening?
Yeah.
You know,
because well,
even, I mean, that's another similarity with Southeast Alaska.
Mm-hmm.
Because the indigenous world is just moving along so beautifully
so
in terms
similar.
Of expressing art and
absolutely.
Dance
yes.
oh, and literature.
Yes. It was not until like the 1970s that hula really got its renaissance. It just took off. I mean, of course, you remember the movies from the, you know, 40s and 50s. That we don't consider that real hula. the real hula, the communities in Hawaii started to really embrace hula in the 70s, and it just has not stopped. It is spreading around the world. You know, I'm an Ethiopian hula dancer, you know? So I'm sure I'm the only one in the world. But,
now, that's a chore for you, is to go to Addis Ababa and start a halau.
Halau, exactly.
A hui, yeah. At least a hui.
So it is spreading. My understanding is there's 750 hula schools in Japan alone. It's taking
750.
Off.
750.
Yeah. There are just, thousands and thousands of hula
How many in
students.
Paris? Do you know?
I only know of our halau there, it's a huge school.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. Just back on something you said about the reproductive or risque nature of some of the songs. Risque is in the eye of the beholder, and therefore, I mean, I could see these puritanical missionaries if they said, "What is she saying? What is she saying?" Mm-hmm. Or
more like, "What is she doing? Why is she gesturing?
Yeah, why is she doing that?"
Yes.
And myself, having done ethnographic research in Nepal, I realize how prudish Americans are, and I might extend that to, Northern Europeans in terms of. In the research I did in Nepal, the women, when I was around women particularly, they were very open about sexuality and about reproduction, which requires sexuality. And they would ask me questions and I would blush, and I'm pretty out there. So I could imagine that it was a real cultural clash.
Yes.
And where... the idea of clean-cut hula, I mean, these are bodily functions and don't necessarily, we call them risque.
Yeah. Well, it did not help that the men danced in just loincloths and the women just had the little tea leaf skirts.
Yeah, that's
very
nor,
short. That's part of their tradition.
It wasn't considered...
risque at all.
Risque or
no,
a skin show or anything like that. Nobody got aroused.
Nope.
It was just beautiful.
It was just a way of telling stories. But that's not how the missionaries saw it.
Yeah.
And then when they could not really get rid of hula, what they did was address the way they dressed.
Yes.
And they came up with the long sleeve dresses, the high neck lines and, and
the muumuu.
Yeah.
I mean,
exactly.
The pre-muumuu.
Yeah.
And they all look like they were from some sort of colonial
Victorian
society.
Victorian dresses.
And there's the more traditional muumuus are very
yes.
Victorian.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And some of the older Hawaiian dancers you notice will be wearing that because they still remember.
Yeah.
That's
that era.
Yeah.
Ironically, that would be traditional.
Yes.
When it was such.
It really is not.
It was. Yeah. It means just historical.
Exactly.
Let's take a break right now because we've got some inspiring Hawaiian music for our listeners' pleasure.
Sounds
and
wonderful.
We're going to just take a short break, and then Elsa Demexa and I will be right back to talk some more about hula and Juno in Hawaii and elsewhere.